This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. In the early 1970s, a bar called the Upstairs Lounge was a sacred gathering place for LGBT community in New Orleans. It served as a meeting place for members of the Metropolitan Community Church and a home to eclectic drag cabaret performances. But one night in June of 1973, somebody deliberately set the lounge on fire. The incident killed 32 people and injured many others, and is considered to be the largest massacre of gay people in U.S. history. But to this day, little remains known about the tragedy. A new documentary, Upstairs Inferno, is trying to change that. It tells the story of the fire and documents the effects the incident had on survivors and the New Orleans community. The film screens this Saturday to close out the North Carolina Gay and Lesbian Film Festival, but first we get a preview. Here in our studio, I am joined by the film's producer, Robert Camino. Hello, Robert.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine. Tell us how you came across this bit of LGBT history in New Orleans.
Well, you know, I thought I knew my gay history, but I guess it was late 2012, someone that eventually became a producer of my film had approached me. He had seen what we had done with our previous documentary, and he said, "Do you know about this story? Do you know about this chapter of our LGBT history?" And I was shocked that I didn't know, because it's one of the most major events in our culture, and very few people know about it. It happened about 4 years after the Stonewall raid, and I think it's about as significant as the Stonewall Inn raid, but few people knew about it. So I started researching it, learning more about it, and I felt that it was necessary to share this story with the world.
Well, before we get to the fire, tell us about the Upstairs Lounge. Where was it, and what was it like?
Sure. The Upstairs Lounge was on the edge of the French Quarter in New Orleans, Louisiana. It wasn't near the touristy part of the French Quarter, and it was far away from a lot of the other gay bars in the city. It was in a seedy part of the city, but it was a very, well-respected bar. A lot of people considered it their sanctuary. The people that were in there, they all basically knew each other. They considered themselves family. It was very casual. There was a theater in the back of the bar where they held performances. They called them Nelly Dramas, as a play on melodramas. And they had fundraisers for local charities. So it was just a real strong sense of community that was represented at the Upstairs Lounge.
Well, here's a clip from your film that when you talked with a number of people who remember the lounge.
It was more like a social club, you might say, than a bar. It wasn't so much of a cruising or pickup or hustler bar or anything like that. I'm not going to sit here and say that nothing ever happened along those lines on occasion, but mostly it was just a gathering place of friends. I used to take my little black shaggy-haired dog up there. His name was Jocko, and he'd sit up on a bar stool and have a little bowl of milk and vodka and wander around. But we just said he was a bar hound.
That's a clip from the new documentary Upstairs Inferno about the largest gay mass murder in U.S. history. The film is screening Saturday at the North Carolina Gay and Lesbian Film Festival, and I am joined by the film's producer and director, Robert Camino. Give us the context. This is the fire. It happened in 1973, 4 years after Stonewall. Give us a sense of what's happening, sort of on the LGBT timeline, and give us the context. What's happening in those communities?
Well, have to remember that New Orleans is in the South, and so a lot of the activism that was occurring in New York hadn't quite made its way down to the South yet. In the beginning of 1973, it was ruled that homosexuality was no longer a mental disorder, but a lot of people still considered that being gay was something was wrong with you. So that mentality was still strong within our culture. So people had to live double lives. If you were found to be gay, you could be evicted from your home. You could be fired from your job. You could be disowned from your family. So it was a very tough time for people in the LGBT community. So they would look for places where they could be themselves, and the upstairs lounge was one of those places.
All right, well, tell us about that night in 1973. Tell us what happened, what we know about what happened that night.
It was June 24th, 1973. It was the last Sunday in June, which is typically is now known as Gay Pride Day. Stonewall Raid happened on the last Sunday in June. But it was the last Sunday in June, around 7 o'clock, someone deliberately set fire to the stairs leading up to the upstairs lounge. There was the upstairs lounge was on the second floor of a building, and at the top of the stairs, there was a fire door. And there was a buzzer at the bottom of the stairs, which when people rang that buzzer, typically meant that there was a delivery of someone was making a delivery, or there was a taxi cab or something like that. And the buzzer kept on going off, and no one really knew why in the bar while it was going off. So a patron in the bar opened the door, and the fire was fully engulfed in the staircase, and it basically acted as a chimney flue, throwing a fireball into the lounge, igniting the curtains, igniting the flammable carpet at the time. Flammability tests were not enacted at that time, and the entire bar just went up in flames in just a matter of seconds.
And there were bars on a lot of the windows making escape from the second floor, even if you wanted to jump out the window. Difficult. You talked to some of the survivors who remember that night. Let's listen.
All of a sudden, you heard people screaming, from laughter to screaming.
I could see the glow of the flames, and all of a sudden, the flames, just that curtain that was hanging at the top, had just kind of like shot straight across that. And oddly enough, it was the indoor-outdoor carpeting, and the fire actually lifted that carpeting up. It was like floating up with the flames were just going under it.
It was pandemonium instantly when the fire came into the bar. It was the end of a beer bus, and he had lots to drink, and then the windows were right there. They thought that would be a quick exit, so they just ran to the windows.
They had a big window here, and I think it was three windows. Wasn't it three? Okay, one there. And you saw people run that way, and I went to the middle one and miraculously got through the bars and then hit the ground. People, you know, blocked my fall, and I woke up in a hospital.
That's a clip from the documentary Upstairs Inferno about a gay mass murder and the largest in U.S. history. The film is screening this Saturday at the North Carolina Gay and Lesbian Film Festival. Robert Kamina is the producer and director and with me now. There were survivors, and their stories are heartbreaking. They had friends and even lovers inside. Maybe I can get you to tell the story of Regina Adams.
Certainly. Regina Adams is probably one of the most touching. Her stories is one of the most touching in the film. Not to take away from any of the other stories, but Regina was there with her lover at the time, and they realized that they had left their wallet at home. So Regina offered to go down the street to their apartment to pick up the checkbook and come back. She went to the apartment, got the checkbook, came back, wasn't gone at 10 minutes, and she returned to see the bar in flames. And she waited for her partner to come out of the fire, and he never did. He later found out that he was killed in the fire. His name was Reginald Adams. And it disturbed her. I mean, it completely devastated her life. You know, she was in a state of denial. She kept on waiting for him to come home. And the devastating effects lasted for years. It led to alcoholism. It led to her not wanting to get close to people, afraid that she might get hurt again. But she considers Reginald her one true love. She still talks to him every day, and in honor of him, she legally changed her name to Regina Adams.
And she talked with you about the aftermath of that fire.
And I ran up down the hallway in Charity Hospital and asked Rusty Quentin and several other people, they're all deceased now, if they had seen Reggie. And none of them recalled seeing him.
And there were also firemen and people there. And one of the firemen explained to me that people sitting at the piano didn't make it out. And at that time, he said there was no way of telling me if they were going to be able to identify him, because most of them were burnt beyond recognition that were sitting in that area. I don't think I ever felt loneliness in my life until that point. For days, I kept expecting him to come through the door. I called my mother, and she came over, and she stayed with me. She said you would get up and fix breakfast and lay his clothes out for work and everything like he was going to get up and go to work. She said you were kind of in a daze.
It's from Upstairs Inferno, screening at the North Carolina Gay and Lesbian Film Festival. Director Robert Kamina is with me. We know that it's an arson, but that's almost all we know. There's little known about the prosecution, although at one point police thought they had a pretty good suspect. Tell us about the aftermath.
Well, through the investigation, they were able to identify a suspect. His name was Roger Dale Nunez, but all the evidence was pretty much circumstantial, and they were never able to charge him with the crime. He ended up committing suicide about a year after the fire. We don't know what caused that suicide. It may have been out of guilt. He also suffered from a brain tumor. It could have been a cause from that. He also was, I believe he was suffering from internalized homophobia. He was married to a woman, but identified as gay. So we really don't know what could have caused the suicide, but he was never, ever able to answer to any charges.
A big part of the film is the reaction, the public reaction, and in some ways the lack of reaction to the arson. The Metropolitan Community Church plays a big role. Tell us about the church and the effort to get some recognition for what went on. Tell us about the Metropolitan Community Church.
Well, the Metropolitan Community Church was a church established by the Reverend Troy Perry in Los Angeles in the late 1960s. It was a gay-affirming church. And his goal was to establish congregations around the country. And the Metropolitan Community Church was set up in New Orleans. And they did not have a physical home to worship in. And at one point, they did house the service in the theater in the upstairs lounge. And so it became a tradition after church, they would stay at the bar and attend the beer bust. Well, after after their stay at the upstairs lounge, they did eventually find a permanent home. So at the time of the fire, the Metropolitan Community Church was not holding service at the upstairs lounge, but the tradition of going to the upstairs lounge following church still existed. And so many members of the Metropolitan Community Church in New Orleans were in the upstairs lounge at the time of the fire. And unfortunately, among the casualties were two clergy, the pastor of the church, Reverend Larson, and the associate pastor, Reverend Mitch Mitchell.
Well, let's hear how the failure of even the police to take it seriously was one of the, I think, one of the serious charges that are leveled by, you know, by the people who experienced it, and a great source of grief in the aftermath. Let's listen to this.
My God, I went through the roof, and it quoted Major Morse of the police department. We may have a long time find out who these people were. This is bar frequented by. Now, what I remember was thieves, burglars, and queers.
And tell us who that was.
Yes, that was Reverend Troy Perry, the founder of the Metropolitan Community Church. It was Reverend Perry, Reverend John Gill from Atlanta, Reverend Paul Breton from Washington, D.C., Morris Kite, an activist out of L.A., and they came down to New Orleans to get he also had Morty Manford from New York. They came down to help the grieving, help bring justice, help the injured to bring some order to the and peace to the community. So Reverend Perry came down because this was part of his church. Members of his congregation had been killed. So he was doing his best to bring light to the situation. And what you heard there was one of the police officers basically dismissed this this horrific crime, saying, oh, well, it was a bar frequented by thieves, burglars, and queers, as if these 32 people were just disposable. And so he was very angry, and the police later apologized. But that did reflect the attitude of the community at large. It was very cold, very callous.
Not just the police, but also the religious community. Let's listen to this clip.
I kept pushing. I called Baptist churches that laughed and hung up on me. I started calling everybody I thought where someone told me there might be somebody, quote, liberal enough to let us hold our service there, but we willing to take the heat. And I was used to having to take the heat, and I knew what heterosexuals, they were as persecuted worse than we were when they were friends of ours. And so I said, what do we do? I called the Archbishop's office, and they wanted to know if anybody who had died was Catholic. And I said, well, they would have to call the families, would we? No, we're not. We don't give our church, let anybody use our churches for something like that. And we're very nasty on the phone. I couldn't get over it.
They contacted a Lutheran church who said, well, we won't let you use our church, but you might try this church over here. It's in a black neighborhood. It has a black minister, and they're very tolerant of aliens there. They use the word aliens as though gays and lesbians come from outer space or something.
From upstairs, Inferno, the largest gay mass murder in U.S. history. The film is screening at the North Carolina Gay and Lesbian Film Festival. Robert Kamina is the director and with me now. Tell us about screening this film in New Orleans. This film was just released this year, right?
Yes.
Tell us about what happened when you screened it in New Orleans.
We screened the film on the 42nd anniversary of the fire, and I invited survivors, witnesses, family members, friends of the victims, first responders to the screening, and I was honored that so many people from across the country came to the screening. No other time have all these people affected by this one event be in one place, and it was a very emotional time. I mean, at times you could just hear a pin drop and tears. But from what I've heard, it was a very healing time because people could talk about it. It was a reunion for some of the people who haven't seen each other in 42 years. You know, they're family members from the upstairs lounge. And so they were able to talk about the feelings that they had, because a lot of them felt like this pain that they've been going through for the past 42 years, it's just, you know, that they've been alone. But they realize that they're not alone, that that other people are also going through this pain. So I think it was a very healing experience.
What are your hopes for this documentary outside the New Orleans community and what it might add to the conversation about LGBT history?
Well, first of all, it's a part of American history. It's not just part of LGBT history. I think our country needs to know about this, because this is still the deadliest fire in New Orleans history, and it deserves more attention than it has received over the past 42 years. But, you know, there is no silver lining to this film. It's a gruesome story, and there's no way around it. But I hope people, once they see the film, there's a renewed call for compassion, compassion for people unlike us, compassion for people who are hurting, compassion for people who are in need, because there definitely wasn't a lot of compassion after this fire. So I really hope it's a reminder that we need to have more compassion in this world. And I also hope that it's a reminder for us to seize the day. You know, life is fickle. We need to make sure we tell our loved ones that we love them every day, because we don't know what the day has in store for us.
Robert, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Robert Kamina is the producer and director of the new film Upstairs Inferno. It will close out the North Carolina Gay and Lesbian Film Festival this Saturday at 9 o'clock. You can get all the details at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, we hear about the long struggle and the continuing struggle for voting rights in America. Stay tuned.